Hi, I'm Mike Gasowitz, CEO of Tricert Financial Group. Welcome to another episode of In Focus. Today, we're going to do a fourth quarter investment outlook, and joining me is Joel Baker, our Chief Investment Officer. Welcome, Joel.
Thank you, Mike. Good morning.
Good morning. So, Joel, we always start off these conversations with, well, how have you been sleeping? How has the team been sleeping lately? So we're all back from a Christmas break, back into it in big time, in a big way. How did you sleep there at the end of the quarter?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Yeah, great question. We get that a lot. But yeah, there's still lots of moving parts out there, that's for sure. So a lot of things that we're still sort of swelling around that we're sort of trying to decipher, and what does that mean to strategy? But I must admit, we're sleeping better, being we had a bit of a late year rally last year. So we were sort of aligning expectations mid to maybe even into Q3 of more of a flat year. And yet, boom, markets took off and we had a bit of a late year rally. So that was good to see in the portfolios for sure. So that made us sleep a bit better ending up the year in terms of normal returns. So that was great news.
Nice. You mentioned the Santa Claus rally. So why don't we talk about the equity markets first? What did we see there?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So yeah, really what happened, Mike, was we were kind of sailing through the year, call it Q2, Q3. We were kind of in a flat market. We really were. And sort of it was basically a relief is the word that comes to mind in terms of interest rate news. And what I mean by that, Mike, is it seemed to be a relief to the market that rates were pausing where they were, if not at a peak to where they were. So that was a big rally to pretty much every asset class, even bonds. So the last basically 6 weeks of the year, we saw the majority of the portfolio returns on the annual basis. So that was that much of a lift. Call it a Santa Claus rally, but really that was the case where we had this late the year rally to sort of boost the returns in the portfolio. So that was great news. To your point, we're kind of early in the earnings seasons for this quarter. Companies are just coming out with their numbers now, and you know, call it 10% of the S&P 500 companies have reported. And so far, so good. It's about a little over half of reported positive earnings news, which is always great. Interesting, profit margins are trending down, but the actual earnings are up. So that's good news so far, even though we're early in the season. So that's what we're seeing so far in terms of our reviews. But
any big differences between the U.S. and Canadian markets?
Yeah, the U.S. continued to outperform. So if we look at it in Canadian dollars, Mike, to kind of use a constant term, the U.S. market did beat us last year in terms of Canada. But really, it was a continuation of the U.S. tech dominance. And I'm sure our audience has heard of the Magnificent Seven and how that's influenced the markets. And it really was a case of those companies continue to dwarf not only their economic sectors, but also their overall performance. You know, definitely it's a case where if we sort of exclude those, just to kind of give you a sense, those seven companies, Mike, believe it or not, represent $12 trillion of market cap now. So that's how big those seven companies are. And so, again, we try and strip that out and kind of look at the market independent of that. And just to give you a sense, and again, I'll keep things pretty simple here, but those magnificent seven trade at about a multiple average of about 29 times. And they call it a PE ratio, so 29 times. The S&P 500 then trades at about 19 times. So if you sort of pulled those seven companies out and looked at all of the other 493 companies, that means the market trades at about an average of 16 times. And that's right in line with historic numbers. Okay. It just kind of gives you a sense of how that dominance or that overperformance of seven companies alone have really lifted the U.S. markets in terms of that. And to be truthful, if it's a case where if your portfolios don't have that much exposure to those companies and to that magnitude, you're defending performance. It really is that simple. So good news to clients is we definitely have exposure to the space. We have all the companies that make up the Magnificent Seven in the portfolios, but just not to the extent of the S&P 500.
It is shocking when you see the weight, and I know there was some stat, I don't know if you recall, Joel, in terms of even from a country, the MSCI World Index, and comparing the weight of the Magnificent Seven, as you call them, compared, I think it was Japan. Do you recall the other countries as well?
Yeah, they were big ones. So Japan, yeah, I do. Japan was one, China was one, the UK was one, and France. So to your point, the Magnificent Seven have a greater representation in the world index than those four countries. So just staggering how they dominate, yeah.
And so, and back to your point in terms of, our clients have holdings in those, but as investment managers and back to our QSEC approach, looking out for quality, you could argue, are they overinflated? Are they not? That's another conversation on its own in terms of, forward-looking you know, the forward looking, all those views.
But yeah, that's in terms of,
yeah, go ahead.
That's a great point, Mike. So yeah, those are great companies we want in the portfolios for sure. And one could argue that it's a case where those companies do demand a premium in terms of prices compared to the average company in the S&P 500. So we wouldn't disagree with that at all. It's just, to your point, it's the pricing of them. You know, we kind of stick to our fundamentals. We kind of come up to what we think is buying them at reasonable prices. And we want to sort of stick to that as opposed to just chase them. And that's always the trade-off of how much are you willing to pay up for those premium prices for those good quality companies.
Right. Any highlights on the Canadian market side that you want to?
Yeah, the one item I did want to sort of mention, Mike, was bonds. So back to boring old bonds. I always sort of say that phrase. But one interesting point that we were watching closely here is in terms of tracking as far back as we could look, as investors, we've never seen a period of 3 negative years for bond returns. And why I'm sort of saying that relevance is 2021 was negative, 2022 was negative, and up to that, say, Q3 reference I was making before, it wasn't looking good in 2023. And again, bonds got this late year-end rally. So again, poof, that was gone. We don't need to worry about that. But that was sort of a very interesting statistic on boring old bonds that had us sort of biting our lip, to use that phrase, that, geez, this isn't looking good in mid-year. So that was just an added sort of thing we watch. But again, it doesn't hit the headlines. So investors probably aren't aware of that sort of statistic on the fixed income side of the portfolio.
Right. So that's to your point. Let's talk a little bit more then about the debt side of our portfolios, bonds, interest rates. You mentioned that, you know, in terms of call the Santa Claus rally and the like, actually more driven around, dare I say, I'll call it optimism on the interest rate front. Do you want to talk a little more about that?
That's a good way to say it, Mike, for sure. Yeah, all eyes continue to be on inflation. Like, it really is a case of how is inflation doing? Is it on track to the central bankers? Is it trending up in the right direction or down in the right direction and the speed? So all those sorts of things factor into forward expectations of interest rates based on those inflation numbers. And I can tell you sort of the consensus estimates is something that we sort of look at. And in the US market, basically they're pricing in 1.5% in rate cuts over the next year. So over the next 12 months, they're going to cut rates about 1.5%. And one could argue, geez, how could that be, Joel? We just went through this rapid increase, you know, record pace in terms of rates going up, and now we're talking about 1.5% down in 12 months. But that's the weird market we're in right now, kind of figuring out this inflation cause. In Canada, we're not quite that steep. So it's basically a little over 1% over the next 12 months. So the trend is exactly the same, Mike, but not quite as steep as far as cuts, as far as this consensus thinking. Probably the one thing that jumps out is it seems to be off the table now that there's no real expectations of a rate increase. So that seems to be priced in. Even our Bank of Canada is now using language of that sort of trend. So from here, it's down, no more ups, to use that phrase. So we'll see how that pans out. But that's sort of what the consensus estimates is in terms of interest rates.
Right. And when, just to be clear to folks listening, the consensus, that's really driven by, as I understand, we kind of look what's going on in the futures market. Is that correct?
Correct. Yep. Correct. Yeah. Yep.
So those are contracts. People basically, exactly, they're kind of hedging, saying this is what we think is going to happen in the future. So it is, yeah, when you say numbers like 1.5 US and 1 in Canada, again, we're talking, those are again, pretty drastic moves. And, it will be interesting to see.
They're big moves, Mike, and like I say, boring old bond world in a short time frame. For sure they are. Yep, for sure. Okay. And to your question, like in Canada here, what we're sort of seeing is still an inverted yield curve. And really that's a fancy way to say that bonds are yielding more in the short term than they are in the longer term. So it's kind of if you can sort of picture it, it's a graph. It's to the right but down as opposed to the right and up, if you will. So again, that's something that we're still seeing in Canada here. Why we're sort of concerned about that, or why we watch that so closely, is that an inverted yield curve is still a very accurate and highly predictable measure of a future recession. So the fact that we're still inverted has still got this gray cloud about, are we going to head into recession or not so much? And really, that's one of the key measures of an inverted yield curve.
So you mentioned the R word. We talked about it last quarter. So any update in terms of thoughts there?
Yeah, it's still some gray clouds, Mike. I wouldn't say we're out of the woods yet. So that was one key indicator that I mentioned. You know, another one that we sort of keep an eye on is the ISM or the PMI figures. And really that's the survey of all the purchasing managers out there. And there's a real imaginary line, I'll say it that way, of 50. So a gauge of above 50 is good news for the economy. And if we just slip under 50, it's again a strong indicator of a recession. And we're trading now in the high 40s. So again, we're still below 50. Not crazy below 50, but the fact is we're still below 50. So, and again, another strong indicator that's not really indicating great news as far as a recession, but it's not in terrible territory. I can tell you one thing that's sort of interesting in our jobs is we talk to a lot of different clients in a lot of different industries, and we're hearing language from clients that they're expecting softness coming. In some cases, they're using words like significant slowdowns coming. So I think it's out there that there's still this potential of a, you know, recessionary times or slowing times. But a lot of things are changing here. Back to interest rates, if they gauge that rate, it should be pretty smooth. And so some would call that a soft landing. So hopefully it is a soft landing and we don't really have too much damage in the way of economic recessions and recessionary tough times. So,
as always, though, there's always lurking geopolitical risks. Sadly, the world has not calmed down from that perspective. And that always presents uncertainty, right?
For sure. I think there's still, like, to use that sports analogy, I'd say we're still playing a little bit more defense than offense. We're still in economic sectors that probably protect us in terms of, if a recession does occur, we're still in those larger cap names that are going to be there through thick and thin. I say that as opposed to getting into companies that do have maybe stretched balance sheets. So some that are leveraged to interest rate increases. We don't want any sort of companies that would be in trouble debt-wise until this is a little bit more clear as far as interest rates. So I'd say we're still playing a bit more defense, Mike, than offense. But again, that's just part of this uncertainty in the economic indicators.
Excellent. Joel, as always, thank you for this.
Okay. Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Folks, as always, if you have any questions, don't hesitate to reach out to your financial advisor or chat with your TriCert portfolio manager, or don't hesitate to reach out to myself. Take care, everyone.